Welcome, everyone. We're joined by Rob Burns, Executive Director of the East Midtown Partnership, Kate Sheeran, Executive Director of Kaufman Music Center, and artist Sage Gallen. As usual, I'm Jackie Graham, co-founder of Art on the Ave. And today, we'll be talking about creative solutions that bring joy to New York City. So a little while ago, Ben Gutman, in a Cairns op-ed published on February 25th, suggested that New York is long overdue for a dose of civic happiness. And that's kind of something that we'll touch on today and how our different organizations try to bring some of that happiness to the city. And so my question for you, Rob, is how does your organization play a role in creating civic happiness or creating those joyful spaces within the city?
Civic happiness is tough in a commercial area, and especially an area with no parks, no public plazas. So we've tried to be creative over the years. We had our own version of The Amazing Race for a couple of years, where various teams made up of people that work in the area would have to go to 7 or 8 different establishments within the bid boundaries and complete different challenges. That's way they get to know their community a little bit better, to go into areas they don't normally go to during their morning commute. But, you know, it's a challenge. And that's one of the reasons that this public art project, Intersections, has been so great for our community. And it's really inspired us internally to look at other ways we can integrate art into what we do to bring people here and to bring a sense of joy to the community, to make things so it's not all glass and concrete, so people are seeing interesting, exciting things on the streets.
Sage, what do you think constitutes a joyful community? You're so full of joy, I feel like you'd have a good answer to that.
Hello, and it's a pleasure to be here with you. What do I think constitutes for a joyful city? I think transformation is always such a huge word for me. It's a not just a word, but it's an action. It's also a choice to transform one's environment, one's community, one's self, one's spirit. And I think it all works in tandem when we are able to transform ourselves, be it through music or art or poetry or whatever it is. We're able to find a sense of centeredness that I think really becomes infectious to the people around us, and as a result, becomes infectious to the community in which we live. I find that after living 24 years in Los Angeles and coming back home to New York, one of the, if not the most vibrant, eclectic, and diverse cities in the world, you have so many elements of transformation working all simultaneously. And I think through art is a certain sense of connection that ties it together. It's transformation for me.
It does. I love that you touched on transformation, because I feel like that's so much what my organization tries to do, and Kate's as well, and also Rob's. Kate, how does your organization, Kaufman Music Center, play a role in supporting ideas of transformation and also of creating spaces in the city that are joyful?
I love what Sage said about transformation. Actually, it's a funny coincidence because we often pick year-long themes that both our students and our professional artists are working within. And for the 1920 season, we picked transformation. Now, little did we know how appropriate that would be. But our students and one of our artists in residence, Natalie Joachim, wrote a piece that became a digital album out of necessity called Transformation. So I'm hearing that in my head as I speak. But, you know, when we're thinking about transformation, all of these projects came out of this time that was so transformative for all of us. And when I think about joy in the city, before these really unpredictable years, or even now, the basis for joy is somebody feeling like their whole self. And I think art gives us a basis to do that, right? You respond to art in such different ways when you're taking it in, whether it's visual art or performing arts. And that's really what we've noticed at Musical Storefronts. It's what we missed at live performance. We're lucky that we were able to have stream concerts, both for professional artists and for our students, but we miss the immediacy of live performance, which is why we brought music to the streets. And what I noticed was, yes, joy, kids dancing, people holding hands, people, I don't know whether they were crying tears of happiness or they just needed a moment to have a cathartic experience and have a reflective moment. But even that is like something that contributes to joy, because you can take a moment and experience the emotion you need to, which leaves room for joy when you're able to have it.
For our listeners, can you explain a little bit about what Musical Storefronts is?
Sure. So Musical Storefronts We started in January of 2021. It's a concert hall we built in an empty storefront where performers are behind the glass. For obvious reasons, then it was a safety issue. So professional musicians of all kinds are behind the glass, and then the music is amplified to the street. So the audience are passersby, and the musicians are classical musicians, jazz, Broadway, R&B, gospel. We've had every kind of musician. And the mission is really twofold. It was to provide much needed work for artists and to bring this joy and community to the streets. And what happened was pretty amazing. I mean, we kept extending the run, both because we were so grateful to have funding and real estate partners who believed in it, and because the community responded so positively. And this resonated with folks. Last year, we did over 100 concerts. We were able to employ over 200 artists. And we count who stops by for more than a few minutes. We had over 31,000 people.
Wow.
This year, we hadn't planned to bring it back because it was unpredictable times. We didn't know if we needed it. And of course, concert halls are open again. But when that became in question with the Omicron surge, I asked our partners that provided the space if they would be willing to again, and they were there for us at Milstein Properties. They were there for us again, and more corporate partners stepped up to fund it and fund the artists. So we're doing a short run. This is the last week of it, 23 concerts, which is kind of a normal season, but seems small compared to last year. And it's, of course, in addition to our presenting at Kaufman Music Center in Market Hall. And we have about 70 artists this year. We've already had over 5,000 people stop by. So the need for artists and the joy that people are having taking it in is still present, even though circumstances have changed.
And for those of you that don't know Art on the Ave, we do something very similar. We create street-facing galleries or exhibitions that, again, like yours, are kind of based on a theme. And they're temporary, and they're meant to be bringing access to the streets, as well as giving exposure to artists who otherwise maybe do not have as much representation, or especially when we started during COVID, we're really struggling to have that interaction with potential buyers. Sage has joined us in our fourth exhibition in East Midtown, where we feel like we're in a bit of a different stage. It's less of a fight or flight response to COVID and more of a, we've seen what the positive effects of what these kinds of street-facing activities can bring to a community.
Oh, I was just going to say, during the pandemic, I actually moved, and I live in Jersey City now, New Jersey. And it's one of the fascinating things I found in taking walks around the area is how downtown Jersey City has such a healthy public arts project. There's an adventure around every corner. There's a new sculpture. There's some, it could be something as simple as putting objects in trees to brighten up what otherwise would be a kind of a bleak winter streetscape. It really opens your eyes to the area you live in and work in and play in.
Like you just said, putting objects in trees, even if you're somebody that doesn't really care at all about art, that someone would be able to walk past that and look up and say, someone put some stuff in some trees, and maybe smile. And that is bringing joy to the community in a creative way. Sage, can you just tell us a little bit about your experience with Art on the Ave so far? You don't have to compliment me the whole time.
Oh, no, but I will. Because it's been nothing less than extraordinary for me. As I mentioned, I'm just getting back to New York after living 24 years in Los Angeles. And if I may, I'm going to circle back around to a thought I had when Kate was speaking, and you as well, with these programs built out of necessity to employ artists or to expose artists, to transform empty spaces into something usable so that the general public can participate in, engage and cry, interact with. And while you were both talking, it struck me that we had collectively gotten into such a profound rut, I think. And what COVID did was brought forth a lot of realization and a lot of necessity for change. And I think when we speak about joy, for me, I have to understand unhappiness. To personalize it, when I speak about my joy, I have to understand my unhappiness and realize that if I'm in a rut or if I choose to be unhappy, there are solutions to get out of that, solutions to find, to engage, to create joy. And for me, that's one of the things that Art on the Ave has done. It's been very interesting for me just watching people and just as an artist, you know, when I was told that they were hanging the works at 875 Third Avenue, the show had not yet opened, but I kind of figured, well, I could get a sneak peek. And I'm walking down the escalator, and I see my work hanging there, and I literally burst into tears and became even more joyful as I'm walking around the facility and seeing not just my work, but the work of other artists and the beauty that I get to hang alongside. And I'm watching people because, you know, there's no pictures of me or the other artists on the thing. So nobody knows, oh, that's my piece. And I get to watch from a distance somebody looking at my work or one of my co-artists' work and watching their joy, watching their interest or how the work speaks to them and makes them feel or touches them. And it's just really an incredible experience to be a part of Art on the Avenue. To have been selected was a huge honor, like I said earlier. You know, art is a profound, and I say this, your mom quotes me on this, is art whispers to the eyes, but it screams to the soul. And that's in every genre, you know, and to be a part of an organization, again, of four amazing women who have created this foundation, this organization, and watching how it affects other people, not just me as an artist, but the people who are in that atrium eating their lunches or drinking their coffees and watching them sitting in an environment just surrounded by just wonderful works of art. Yeah.
I love what you said there, that you were able to watch people from a distance kind of eating their lunch stumble upon the pieces because, and Kate, I'm sure you can speak to this as well. It's so much what both of our organizations do is try to create those happy accidents of we're bringing art to people as opposed to a traditional model where you go to the museum, you walk up those very impressive steps at the Met, but it kind of feels like it can almost create a barrier sometimes to that art because it just feels like such an event to go to. Whereas with our two organizations, I think what we're really trying to do is create those accidental connections, whether that be to music or to art. Is that kind of how you feel?
Yeah, I do. You know, access is so paramount for us in different ways. It's like the slice of the Venn diagram that's access and discovery, right? So for us, that comes in a few ways. We have 3,000 students in addition to our professional artists presenting. And when you're around children that are discovering things for the first time, it's the first time they played this piece. It's the first time that's always there, right? So we are very lucky to be surrounded by that, like, woo, isn't this cool thing? And so I think there's a thread that connects there when we're seeing people discover things that this light is turned on. And I think that that's kind of been this interesting thing that we didn't really think about that would come out of this kind of presenting, just bringing it to the street, because we love welcoming people to our concert hall, but there are people who probably heard all kinds of music that they didn't think they would like because we just brought it to the street. Oh, I don't like classical, or I don't like jazz, I don't like this. Yes, you do. You just, for whatever reason, you think you might not, right? And so they stop and listen, all that. So I think this for us has sparked the how do we keep doing this? And we have all kinds of plans in the works of bringing music all around the city in unexpected ways. So whether it's in storefront specifically or various other public spaces, this for us has opened a door that I think maybe we would have thought of before, but this has enforced for us how cool it is. And actually getting our students in on the mix has been cool too. I mean, because these are paid opportunities, we wanted to focus primarily on professionals who needed it, but we've infused a few student performances this year too, because our students have missed performing as well. They miss interacting with audiences, but they've caught the bug now. They are performing at community centers and nursing homes and things like that. So there's all kinds of ways, the tendrils of this kind of presenting.
We hope so as well. What you just said there about interacting with audiences, I have a question. Both Sage, you can give your opinion from the perspective of an artist that participates in these kinds of street-facing shows. And Kate, you as well, as someone that organizes these with a different kind of artist, be that a musician. For visual art, typically the gallery experience is really important when a buyer can come in and speak to the artist in the space and speak to their work. And that's kind of where that personal connection comes, and that's where a sale happens, right? And with musicians as well, maybe having that glass barrier between the musician and the audience. Kate, have you heard from your musicians if they feel a lack of connection? And Sage, how have you felt in your experience with having your work behind glass and having people not be able to go in and see it, do you feel like there's a lack of connection or no?
No, I don't feel there's a lack of connection. There are pieces that I do, like I'm kind of a crazy artist where I like people to touch the actual piece because I think, again, art speaks in so many different ways and texture is one of those ways. I don't feel there's a lack of connection. I do, though, love that art on the app does. We do the art walks and we get to be present in those events and talk about the work, the piece, the theme, you know, the process of creation. As an artist, that's where I find my life begins, is this in the process of creation. You know, I'm a spectator as well, and that informs my work because I think, again, to me, art is a very spiritual thing. Kate said something that it was so deep to me. I don't like classical. No, you do. You just never had access to it. And to have that ability to give access, be it through the visual art or musically, it to me just helps inform a person's spirit, which then envelops them and allows them to grow. And in that growth is where my connection with the viewer, with the observer, with the collector really comes into play. Another thing that Art on the Ave does, which is awesome, is that we do the recording. So if you hit the little QR code, you could hear the artist speaking about their lives or their work. And so there's an interesting intimacy even in that, even though I'm not physically there talking to you, but you get to peep into the window of the artist's life. And then you could contact the artist. Like I was contacted recently and last night I had a conversation with a potential collector. So I think that right now we're at a different stage of connection and communication because of COVID, the necessity, Zoom and streaming and all of these things. So I think we're in a fascinating time, I think, to rewrite definitions, intimacy, connection, access, exposure.
I agree with a lot of what Sage is saying. We have certain things at the storefront that are the same QR codes, and we have certain hashtags and Instagram handles, and then the artist can say theirs. And so from that venue, have a little connection, which is not how traditional concert venues work, right? You're not saying your Instagram handle from the stage. So there's one little bit there, but it also just kind of depends on basis of comparison. If we're comparing it against circumstances that existed in early 2021, this was way more connection, right? So this was the only live performance that was really happening in the city, especially in the winter. Right. Later on, there were outdoor things and there were some things happening, but everything that professional artists had been doing, any kind of artist had been doing, it was on a screen. And people were so starved for real live performance and connection. So that provided more. It was just the glass in between. But there's so many moments I can think of where artists started performing and you could see them light up or get choked up, or they would take photos from inside the storefront out because they were so excited to see real people experiencing their art again. The other thing is, I mentioned their kids dancing. It happens all the time. And there's people that react in different ways, again, because it's not a traditional concert venue. So I think it's just like outside of the glass itself, which obviously is a barrier in some ways sonically. You know, they can't hear us clapping. We always try to be extra visual with our clapping, but that's really the only thing. They can see everybody. They can see how people react. Artists often call people up to the front. You'll see like a little row, especially of kids. So it's a different thing. And the connection is so immediate because people don't discover it. And one of the best examples I can think of from last week was our artist in residence, the Imani Winds, started their last set. Our artists do 3 short half-hour sets. Some of them do the same music every time. Some of them vary it. And they were varying it. And I was standing there having a conversation. All of a sudden, they started their final set with the Ukrainian national anthem. It happened to be that a Ukrainian couple walked past and stopped. And you could tell they were so moved. And like, we couldn't have guessed that was going to happen. It's just happened because it's New York. Our city is international. And those people needed that moment.
Absolutely. Oh, that's so nice. My next question, or my next point that I'd like to touch on, is just that Art on the Ave would not be able to happen without the support of our partners, namely the business improvement districts that collaborate with us in different locations around the city. So, Rob, why Art on the Ave? Why was that something that you wanted to support? And why was that the thing that you chose this year as opposed to something else?
Even years ago, we were looking for a way to bring art to this community. And again, there's no public space here. I don't have a park. I can't just arrange to get a sculpture in, or I can't arrange for a public plaza to put up paintings. So that's always been a challenge. Now, during a pandemic, when I've got about a 20% vacancy rate in the retail storefronts, it was a challenge to bring life back to the streets. From afar, I saw the Columbus Avenue project that launched Art on the Ave. And then Barbara, your mother, was in a community board meeting around a year ago. And I got a chance to watch her and hear her story. And it got me thinking. And I collaborated with my director of marketing, Sarah Hornung. And we put our heads together and we reached out to Art on the Ave, and the rest is history. What it's done, though, unfortunately, there are many more vacant storefronts than there are pieces of art. That's a challenge because a lot of owners are resistant, and it takes some time to wear them down and get their permission to utilize their empty storefronts. That said, we're really happy that four or five locations in this district, we were able to brighten the pedestrian experience and bring art to the community, especially in, frankly, in the building I'm sitting in right now. As I talk to you, the concourse level of the atrium was, before the pandemic, a bustling food court. Now, when nobody has come back to their, or a few people have come back to their offices, there's only one lunch establishment left down there. Otherwise, all vacant windows. The building management took the time to renovate the space, but it was still just glass windows looking into empty concrete raw space, which is now turned into a gallery. It draws pedestrians, it draws the workers in, it draws the lunch crowd in. And it's just a great creative utilization of space that would otherwise just be sitting there empty and frankly depressing. The goal, of course, is to fill it eventually, and it'll come back. We know that. But in the meantime, it's a gallery. It's great. It's a real asset to the community.
Kate, I want to ask, because I think we've both had very similar experiences, especially when starting these kinds of organizations. And a huge part of that is our partners, people that have, like you said in our offline conversation, championed the idea. And for Art on the Ave, for us, that's our funders, our artists who are the biggest champions of Art on the Ave, as well as the Art on the Ave team. And then really important for us are the bids that have that access to real estate, but not just real estate, retail frontage as well. And they really have their finger on the pulse of what's going on in the community. And for us, that bid support is really paramount. Have you felt the same in your organization, in your hood?
Yeah, absolutely. It wouldn't have gotten off the ground without the Lincoln Square bid and its president, Monica Bloom. The idea for Musical Storefronts was brought to us by our friend Jay Dweck, and he saw this need. He's a real champion for musicians, and he saw the empty storefront, and he had been trying to find a partner, and everybody thought it was too crazy, but we're crazy enough to say yes, but there were, you know, it was hard, and the city also was still, a lot of the systems were broken, and you couldn't go through regular channels and things like that, but Monica understood, and through her contacts with the bid, and I'm on the bid board meeting, I spoke about the idea, and a lot of the real estate folks on the bid board connected with me after, and one of them at Millsine Properties really championed it and gave us this beautiful space that's perfect for it. I mean, everything from there's an overhang, you know, so when it rains, you can still experience it, to the residential building upstairs. And so everyone, the whole crew there is so good to us. So when they shovel the snow, they, all the things that you don't really think about are built in, it's huge. We wouldn't be able to do it without them, because to manage something like that is a huge undertaking. So even thinking about sound permits and things like that, it's all the bid and thinking about the connections. And next door, Bread's Bakery, you know, when you think about local business, they give the artists a huge bag of delicious baked goods every day. I mean, people really got into it. And so this year when we started to do it, and last year was funded in total by the Alpha Dime Foundation, extreme generosity. And this year when we went to do it, because it was so successful last year, we really got a lot of corporate partners. Con Edison was the first one in, and then an increasing amount. We have four partners this year who came forward with funding to support artists, which is pretty amazing.
That's amazing. Yeah. It's all about those key constituents that are able to kind of come together and champion this for individual artists, musicians, what have you. So, Rob, how do you measure what you do as a bid? I'm sure you do tons of projects each year, and you know whether you do one again or whether it's just a standalone thing. I imagine that you're tracking the performance of these projects. So I'm wondering how you measure the success of something like Art on the Ave that really relies so much on, like you said, the pedestrian experience.
Pre-pandemic, would have been a lot easier to measure it, frankly, Jackie. It's tough because we don't have the pedestrian traffic we did before March 2020. So we really have to kind of eyeball it more than quantify it by the steadily increasing crowds we're seeing, the press we're getting, frankly, the feedback we're getting from both the property owners and the commuters in the area and the people that work here. So it's tough. It's tough to measure. It's one of those things where you just kind of know it when you see it. And I know this project has been a success.
I'm just cognizant of time. And so before we all hop off, I wanted to ask you one final question, which is, how do you think access to art can be improved in every neighborhood in the city moving forward? What do you think is an idea that you have, or something that you've seen, or something that we're doing that we can continue to do to increase access to art in all neighborhoods in New York? Kay, do you want to go first?
It's a tricky time for arts organizations. We're fairly mid-sized in the city. You know, there's a lot of organizations smaller than we are, a lot of organizations that are larger than we are. And I don't want to diminish how difficult it's been for organizations, in addition to artists themselves, in these times. But when we find these opportunities, they pay dividends to be able to bring art to people. And I do think sometimes, as artists or as organizations, we get so stuck on having to have the huge, big idea, where sometimes it just starts small and bringing something, bring a performance to a block, bring a performance to a community center, those types of things. It starts a conversation and you don't know where it leads. It's the best one. And when it's hyper-local, actually, sometimes it can be the most meaningful because you can really tailor it. I think the most important thing also is, if you're going to do community programming, talk to the people in your community, especially if you're bringing art to folks who don't always get access to it, and ask them what they're into, what they would like to see. And that usually leads to some sort of meaningful connection and direction. And that's what we've found. And it's been totally enriching for us.
Totally. Totally. And Rob, you probably have some great ideas on this because, like you said, you're working towards this with your organization. What are some things that we can do to increase access to art at a street level even?
That is a great question. Unfortunately, I think it comes down a lot to money. I think government and private sector support for the arts is key. I'm fortunate in that my business improvement district has some funds set aside for a project like this, and that the board of directors, which ultimately allocated the money last summer, they were very supportive of this project. But even my funds are finite. So really, corporate support for the arts and government support for the arts is key, because a neighborhood group is not going to really have the financial resources, usually, to do a project like this. And you don't want it all tied to, say, an individual corporation. I mean, that's fine for showcasing art every now and then, but that's not going to bring it to the public the way it'll bring it to certain employees or people that work in a building. But it's not going to bring it to the public the way that I think ideally we want to do with art. So, yeah, it is a case of funding when all said and done. There's only going to be finite space, but there's certainly finite dollars out there.
Sage, what do you think?
In listening to you both, I'm struck by something very interesting, that both Art on the Ave and Kate's organization started off with an idea, a thought, a dream, to facilitate a sense of healing in community, not unmet with obstacles, but those obstacles overcome by perseverance and determination. Idea, dream, action, implementation. As Kate was saying, we had X amount of sponsors the first year. They didn't see the vision. And then this year we have a lot more. I think you were saying, Kay, that, you know, it becomes infectious. People may not know that they're in their rut, and people may not even understand that they're unhappy. So if they don't understand it, they can't see the solution. When people like you two come along with an idea or a solution to transform communities, individuals, people, a couple from Ukraine walking down the street, sometimes it's met with obstacles. But what both organizations have done is not only expose artists to a new audience, not only expose a new audience to an artist, not only allow the artists to engage in their work, the thing that makes our breath, our spirit, our light, our love, but in doing so, that couple from Ukraine could do something for another group of people. And I think it all becomes a collective sense of healing, a collective sense of growth. And, you know, I think that really it starts with, you know, like you step up to a blank canvas and you have a choice. I could keep it blank or I could put something on it. And I don't know what the end product is going to look like, but I could engage in this work and I could get everything out of me. And I could hopefully create something honest, authentic, hopefully that might touch someone, hopefully might make someone feel something.
Oh, Sage, I think my mom's going to start quoting that metaphor.
I adore your mother. I adore Susan, Norma, Barbara, Jackie. You have no idea how honored, how deeply honored I am to be a part of this. And Kate, I so look forward to walking and bumping into one of your events as well, because I think it's just extraordinary. Nothing touches a human soul like art. Nothing.
I think those are just the best words that we could leave on. And Kate agreed. We're super excited to happily stumble upon one of your concerts at Kaufman Music Center or Musical Storefront. And hopefully you'll see us on the Upper West Side at our next exhibition.